BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, Access All listeners. It's Emma here. And I just wondered if you have watched The Assembly. It's an unusual format for a TV show, I think. It's Michael Sheen, the Welsh actor, very famous. And he's in a room full of neurodivergent people and people with learning disabilities asking him questions. Here's a clip.
Welcome to The Assembly. Our collective of autistic, neurodivergent and learning disabled interviewers. We are delighted to have you join us today. Our rules are no subject in out of bounds. No question in off the table. And all might happen. Please tell us who you are.
It really feels like Michael Sheen is all in with this from the start. He walks into a room full of people who are going to just ask him any question they like. I don't know how much preparation he was given. I don't know if he got any questions in advance. It doesn't really feel like he got any questions in advance because he answers really authentically, I think. And the questions are asked really authentically in lots of different ways. There's a guy who just asks him whether he likes different superheroes and he ends up doing a Scooby-Doo impression. And there's questions about bats and Doctor Who. There's a guy who doesn't ask his question for a good number of seconds and Michael Sheen waits really comfortably, I think, and everyone cheers him on. And then there's this question.
Okay, this question is a bit intense, so.
Okay.
How does it feel to be dating someone who's only 5 years older than your daughter?
I mean, I do love that they get right in there into Michael Sheen's love life. Quite enjoyed that. But I just wondered whether it's something you think could fly, whether it should be a series of this. Who should be in it? Who should ask the questions? Who should answer the questions? Maybe we should have our own Access All Assembly. Who should our guest be? Ooh, the possibilities are endless. On with the show.
I am proud of who I am.
When I was younger, I was told I could be anything.
Being deaf, there's nothing wrong, it's such a joy to be deaf.
Me, live at the Apollo, hosting!
I'm on the autism spectrum, so I don't really care about social codes.
They're bringing into the question, should your child exist when he's just on the swings next to you?
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had someone to speak to where you could offload all of your week's grief?
Hello and welcome to Access All, the BBC's weekly disability and mental health podcast. I'm Emma Tracy and I'm in Edinburgh this week, which is really, really nice. I'm going to be talking to Ashley Story, who's the main character in a new BBC drama, Dinosaur, where she plays an autistic paleontologist. How cool is that? I'm also going to be talking to disability consultant and writer Sam Renk about a podcast clip that's been all over our social media feeds and has upset a lot of disabled people this week. You can contact us by email accessall@bbc.co.uk and don't forget to subscribe to us on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts. Disabled people's social media feeds have been full this week of people commenting in disgust at some comments made on a podcast called Low IQ with Cole Anderson James and Jack Joseph. The topic they were talking about was whether hypothetically they would stay with a girlfriend who had been badly injured and become a wheelchair user. Here's a clip, and it does contain some distressing language.
If she was hit by a car and she was like completely mangled, would you?
Would I what?
Stay with her.
Yeah.
Same.
Would you? Yeah.
You wouldn't.
Why?
Because you care about looks so much.
I don't care about looks. Because you're saying mangled people aren't attractive. You've been hit by a car, they're not attractive.
No, I'm saying I would, but I think you would care too much about your being next to someone and like holding hands in public. Because you'd be like, oh, everyone's going to think I'm grim now.
People have also been writing about this clip on X. Here's a flavour of what they've been saying.
Let me be clear. I am not mangled. Neither is it grim to hold my hand. I am strong and independent, just like every other disabled woman you objectify with your sickening words. Every day we face our disabilities and the stigmas that accompany them head on.
It's important to remember that health is in no way guaranteed.
and you could become disabled at some point. Whether it be from an accident, illness, or old age, our health can deteriorate. Would you then view yourself as mangled and grim?
With me to talk about this social media furore is writer, presenter, and disability consultant Sam Rank. Hi, Sam.
Hi, lovely to be here with you.
Sam, what's your reaction to this clip that's been all over the internet?
I wasn't shocked because this is something I come across regularly, but I was angered because I think although we shouldn't play, a game of top trumps when we're talking about disability, I often think if that word, and I'm going to use the word they use, mangled, was another derogatory term to talk about another underrepresented marginalised group, there would be a lot more outrage. The video would have been absolutely bannered on. I actually reported it myself, and it was still up there for a very long time. So it's sad. It's not surprising.
The men in the clip did pull back from what they were saying by the end. You know, they said that they would stay with a girlfriend, that they would have no problem. They've definitely sort of pulled back from what they originally said. But they did use terms like mangled and grim, you know, pretty distressing language. Do you think that that should be illegal to say these sorts of things in a podcast and considered hate speech?
I absolutely think it is ableist hate speech. And unfortunately, you know, when we talk about disability and inclusive practice, when we're talking about the law, disability is still very much at the lower end of the pecking order, so to speak.
So should what they've said be illegal to say?
Yeah, they should have been absolutely taken down immediately. But I see a lot of words still used in mainstream media. You know, some of my favourite programmes still use the R word quite flippantly. You know, so where is this disconnect? How can we bridge that gap? Where are we failing disabled people? Why are we not taking it as seriously as we would any other hate speech or discrimination?
I know you have strong feelings about this needing to be illegal, Samantha, but we did contact the BBC duty lawyer for the legal stance, and this is what they told us. There is no standalone hate speech offence relating to disability, unlike for race, sexual orientation, or religion. How typical is this sort of language on the internet and in the media and this sort of, I mean, behaviour, I want to say, you know, how typical is what they said? How often do you see it?
From my own experience, you know, this did come down to, you know, lads kind of trying to, you know, get that attention. I've often experienced when I've had my own dating, a lot of ableism, a lot of horrible misogyny when it comes to my own disability.
In what way? What have you experienced?
I mean, from the very, very basic, you know, groups of lads when I used to go clubbing and partying when I was much, much younger, you know, egging one another on to go and, you know, go and flirt with me or go and give me a snog, you know, and then laughing about it, you know, talking, pointing, taking sneaky photos, to then the, you know, really kind of offhand comments on online dating or just or any online forums, you know, it's very, very inquisitive about my ability to perform sexually, that association that wheelchair user means not being able to, you know, have a sexual relationship, to, you know, before the pandemic experience a sexual assault and having my wheelchair weaponized against me.
Would women talk about men like this, do you think? Would women talk about disabled men like this?
I think there's probably, some women that would, but I think there is quite a toxic culture amongst men who want to be, you know, who want to be the lad, who want to get the joke. You know, a lot of the content that I see online is taking the mickey, so to speak, out of petite statured women, you know, and it all of it comes from men. Now, I'm not saying all men behave like this, but there seems to be a real laddish culture to kind of get those cheap thrills, to get that reaction from their peer group.
Do you think the level of online hate towards disabled women is actually increasing?
I think we're probably more aware of it because of social media. I couldn't probably say that that's increased.
Yeah.
I'm not a sociologist, so I've not seen any hard data on that, but I definitely think that there is a negative culture when it comes to men and how they objectify women across the board.
Do you think that sort of the explosion of social media has something to do with this? So, you know, TikTok in recent years, and also the maybe that this is young men's backlash against maybe what they see as too much diversity or, you know, wokeism, and it feels like their power is being taken away somewhat.
I think every human being can have intrusive thoughts. You know, I'm a true crime fanatical. Sometimes I have visions of running over someone in my wheelchair that I don't particularly like. But then intrusive thoughts, they pop into my mind and they dissipate very, very quickly. And I think what social media has allowed people to do is to share those intrusive thoughts, but they then get validation. And this validation by the likes, by the comments, by that mob mentality, I guess, by that peer pressure, ultimately sends this message that, oh, okay, so to begin with, I knew that that wasn't the appropriate thing to say, but no, X, Y, and Z. I've got 10,000 people saying, good on you. This is amazing what you've just said. And I think that adds to what we're seeing right now, to be honest.
And how do you feel about so many disabled people sharing that clip? Because I hated watching it over and over again. I found it really, really uncomfortable. And I sort of was like, I wish people would stop sharing this.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I was quite triggered by it. I think that you know, when that actually, the clip got shared quite a lot, you know, on social media, it was just a really heavy time for disabled people. There was a lot in the media going on that wasn't pleasant towards disabled people, and I felt a bit of fatigue. I felt like, wow, you know, is this the world we live in? Are disabled people so hated? But I do say, you know, we need to set our own boundaries when it comes to social media. So
yeah,
try not to read the comments. I went down that rabbit hole and that made me feel 10 times as worse. Take regular breaks away from social media. And also, go and follow some amazing, beautiful, creative, positive content creators. Get that balance.
Samantha Rank, thank you so much for joining me, and thanks for such a great discussion on this.
Thank you.
We did attempt to contact the makers of the Low IQ podcast, but at the time of recording, we have not as yet received a reply. My guest this week is a stand-up comedian, she's a radio presenter, she's a writer, and now she is an actor in the main role in top BBC drama, Dinosaur. And she's a big deal here in Scotland, but I reckon this role is what's going to catapult her onto the actual world stage, because it's on Hulu in the US as well. It's Ashley Story, you're very welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Let's talk about Dinosaur. What is it about? You tell me.
Dinosaur is about Nina, who is a paleontologist, and she lives with her sister Evie, who is her best friend, and they love each other very much. And Evie throws a spanner into the works by telling her that she's getting married to a man she's only known for like a couple of weeks, which isn't enough time. And Nina is distraught. It throws her world into a tailspin, and she has to make this decision of whether she's going to be a good sister or whether she's going to explain the logic of why Evie is wrong for doing this. And all the while, Nina is like me on the autism spectrum. I always forget to say that, because it's not something I say about myself.
Well,
I was going
to jump in and say the reason why she has this absolute need to be so logical about it all is partly because she's autistic. We have a clip of exactly what you were talking about there, so let's hear it.
I've never felt this way, Nina. He's my person.
Well, Mum and Dad are not going to be happy about this.
We're so happy about this.
Now, we know that it's soon, but we're thinking summer wedding.
Lovely.
That's it?
What?
She's marrying some man that none of us have ever met, and that's all you're going to say. Dad, what if he chokes women at the weekend?
Does he choke women on the weekend?
No. He's in a feminist book group.
Well, there you are. We'd only known each other 6 months when we got married.
Yes, but that was in 1986, when everybody was stupid and you thought that the feathered mullet was an all right hairstyle for men.
Oh, I loved my feathered mullet.
Oh, and he's never looked so good.
He looked like Princess Diana.
How long did Romeo and Juliet know each other before they get married? 24 hours?
They were pretend. and then they killed themselves.
Yes, so Nina is being logical there and everyone else is just going on with it. So you're autistic, Ashley, and so is Nina in the drama. Are there similarities between the two of you?
I think there's certainly similarities to how we react to things. There's a lot of differences. Nina's an academic. I am not. I think that we're similar in that we both kind of see the world the same way and react to the world the same way. And we're both kind of sensitive to the same things.
Which isn't surprising because you were involved in writing Dinosaur, weren't you? What was that process like?
I was one of the co-creators on Dinosaur and I wrote episode 3. And I had a lot of overview on the rest of the episodes. It's what I studied in university, filmmaking and screenwriting. So it was a dream come true, literally.
Tell me a bit about the filming of Dinosaur. You know, it's about an autistic person. You're autistic. What was the set like? Was it like really autism friendly? What way did it all pan out?
When we first started, I was really, really anxious about filming because I thought I'm good at masking, but then lockdown happened and my masking skills kind of fell a little to the wayside, and because I wasn't interacting with people and I didn't really have any use for it.
So you're masking as in you pretending and trying to be what people want you to be or whatever.
To use a negative word, trying to pretend to be normal, but that wasn't really in my wheelhouse anymore, and I was really, really scared when we went to film the series, because filming is a really long day. It's like 12-hour days, 5 days a week. You're surrounded by a lot of people, a lot of noise. And I got really anxious. What if I can't kind of maintain? What if I can't hide it? What if I can't, you know, mask? And I talked to Sarah Hammond, who's our executive producer. And I said all this. And she was like, well, don't just be yourself. We didn't hire a person who's autistic and then think that they wouldn't be autistic anymore. That would be strange. So it was really nice. She said that everybody would, you know, accommodate me rather than me trying to accommodate everybody else. And everybody else was kind of given that same level of care. So there was like questionnaires that we filled out before we started filming, about our triggers and stuff like that. Even the neurotypical people, and we all had access to talk to people if we wanted, and there was safe spaces wherever we went, and everything was just really cool. And I know that sounds like it's a lot of work and maybe would slow things down, but we were an incredibly efficient crew and we worked really well with that sort of open dialogue and with everybody kind of being in the same boat rather than it just being special treatment for me.
Did you feel like you were listened to throughout and the character was developed based on stuff that you were saying? Because I follow you on social media, on Facebook and Instagram and stuff, and you know, you're quite open, and there's things that you've mentioned about your life over the last couple of years that I actually saw in Dinosaur, so it feels like you were listened to.
Yeah, very much so. When it came to specifically things about meltdowns or autism, or not even the negative stuff, the positive stuff as well, I was always deferred to, because I think that when you're writing about specifically autism, which is such a big spectrum and it affects everybody differently and people feel differently about their autism, I think that you can only write from a place of honesty and truth, and that's the way to make it work. And if you don't write from that position, it can kind of come off as artificial, or like you're writing for the neurotypical people rather than the neurodiverse people. And yeah. I wanted it to feel real and be authentic and not be there for just to educate other people on what autism is.
Teaching moments.
Yeah. And I didn't want that. And we never really fell into that trap. And that was really good.
But you also kind of have a wider knowledge of autism. How many times am I going to say autism and autistic in this interview? My God, I will talk about other stuff in a minute, I promise. But you kind of have a wider knowledge because your dad's autistic as well.
Yeah, my dad was diagnosed when I was in school, and I was kind of the first person to say, oh, I think this is what's going on, Papa. He had been really, 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 really depressed. Autism wasn't even part of conversation at that point. It was very much the idea of autism was a specific thing, and my dad didn't fit that sort of, I hate to use this as an example, but it's the only thing I can think of. Autism was just seen as this like Rain Man thing. And yeah. that was it. And there was no nuance or spectrum. And in school, I was studying higher psychology and I got given the Baron-Cohen test, which has its problems. But as I read it, I was like, oh my goodness, that's my dad. My dad fits all of these categories for the diagnosis of what was then called Asperger's.
Mm.
And I told him, and then he, who had, he'd been in his bed for maybe like 6 years at this point. He hadn't really got up. He was so sad. And he went to his GP and his GP was like, yeah, that's what that is. And it changed his life. He got help, he got support, and he just knew, just knowing himself helped him. It was mainly just being able in our household for him to verbalize and understand that what he was feeling wasn't, because he would get so angry about tiny things and he didn't know why, and he thought he was just a bad person. That was in his head. That's the only way he could quantify this irrational irritation at tiny, tiny things. And then when he knew, oh, this is autism, I can verbalize, this is just my autism, I'm fine, and I can go away and I can sort of contextualize these feelings I have now, that did more than anything.
You talked about your household there. There are two autistic people in it. I've said it again, autistic again. There are two autistic people in your house. I'm always interested, because obviously loads of houses have more than one autistic person, because often, you know, autistic adults have autistic kids. But I always wonder whether the traits and the things that how autism shows up for you and for your dad, whether they drive you both up the wall with each other or whether it actually helps having another autistic person in the house.
I think it's a bit of both. It helps because we can understand each other, but at the same time, his needs are more and more varied. And I think that kind of helped with the writing of Dinosaur, because we're dealing with a relationship between two sisters where one is neurodiverse and one is neurotypical. And it's sort of like I've had to be the neurotypical person for him to, you know,
yeah,
look after him. And I can kind of see it from both sides. I can see this weird, wonderful brain thing from both angles, because I've been in both sets of shoes.
So how did you get diagnosed then, if you were being his neurotypical person for such a long time?
It was blatantly obvious to everybody around me. I asked my doctor a long, long time ago, after my dad got diagnosed. I went to my GP and he was a very elderly man, and I said, I think I might have the same thing. And he was like, maybe, but don't get diagnosed, because it'll affect your ability to get employed in the future. And I said, oh, okay. And he also said, people like you are just like this. And I thought, okay, people like me are just like this. And then as time went on, I was finding more and more stuff difficult. And I remember I verbalized to my friend once, I was like, you know, when you have to get ready to leave the house and you're thinking of all the things you're going to say and you have to put on a face and you have to prepare yourself and get in character. And she was like, no, I just leave the house. And I thought, oh, is nobody else doing this? Because the prep it takes for me to walk out the door and interact with people is like the prep for an acting job. Is nobody else going into this level of like character work for their own personality before they exit the door? And when I realised no, I thought I should probably go and speak to somebody about that, because I've spent my whole life thinking everybody else was doing this.
And you've got a famous mum, obviously, Janie Godley, absolute legend. And she's a comedian, has been for a long time. Why did you choose to follow in her footsteps?
I didn't want to at all. I've been working in and around stand-up comedy since I was 11, touring and looking after her because my dad couldn't do that. And you'll find with a lot of like the festival comedians, not your telly comedians and the people who are making a lot of money, but your sort of lower rung festival comedians who are just doing like Edinburgh, New Zealand, Australia over and over and over again. They usually have like a person that they take with them, like usually a spouse. And my dad couldn't be that for my mum, so I had to be that for my mum. And so I would do all of the festivals and help her work. And I just didn't want to be a stand-up comedian. I saw it and I was like, nope, not for me. But it was always something that I knew I could probably be good at if I just tried it. And then eventually I did try it. But It was a big rebellion against it. I didn't want to.
So I would say it's fair to say you're a bit of a cult figure, Ashley, with all of your internet sketches and your stand-up comedy. How does it feel to be just about to go really mainstream?
Scary. Being an underdog is a very comfortable place. You get away with a lot of things. You get to be more inventive and expressive and try things because you know that nobody's probably going to see it. And that's a really nice position to be in because you get to experiment without scrutiny. And I'm terrified that I won't have that luxury anymore. But that's the payoff, I guess. That's the exchange rate of getting any modicum of success. But I'd be quite happy if this came out and for like a week everybody was like, yeah, well done, and then I just went back to my normal life.
Oh, Ashley Story, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thank you for having me.
Dinosaur will be on BBC iPlayer from next week, and Ashley also has a radio show on BBC Scotland, and it's on BBC Sounds as well every Friday night into Saturday morning, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. That is your lot for this week. Yes, it is. But before I go, can I remind you that next week is our 100th episode and we are asking you to tell us the best advice that another disabled person has given you. And I can tell you we've brought together quite a few from you listeners and from our disabled celebs, but we do want some more. So if you could send them to us on WhatsApp, our number is 0330 123 9480. You can do a voice message or a text message. Please put the word access before it though, because that helps us find it. You can email it to accessall@bbc.co.uk. So that's the best advice that another disabled person has ever given you. Thank you to my guests, Ashley Story and Sam Renk. And thanks to you for listening. Bye-bye.